And welcome everybody to the Win Hard Work Beats Talent podcast again. Today we are excited and it's timely to have Olympic bronze medalist, NCAA champion, all around amazing dude, husband, father, Coleman Scott on the podcast. Coleman, thank you and welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, it's awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we're going to dive right on in. What we do with every guest is we ask five rapid-fire questions just to get to know you, get things, the icebreakers, you know.
All right. What we like
to do. So what is one hidden talent that you have?
Oh, hidden talent. I don't really have any hidden talents. Shit, I just wrestle. Wrestle and fish. That's about it. Wrestle and fish.
Well, you're pretty good. You're pretty good at the wrestling piece, so you're a pretty good fisherman too.
I don't know if I'm good, but I love it.
Okay.
Hey, it's definitely relaxing. I love fishing as well.
So the next one is where is one place you've been that you'll never go back?
Probably Kazakhstan.
That's fair.
I would say anything that ends with a stand would be fair.
Yeah.
So why Kazakhstan?
I mean, it was all right. It was cool to go to once, but I don't ever see myself. And I say that, but if there's another world championships or something, I'll probably be there. But definitely not for leisure or anything. There was nothing that exciting about it.
Not a lot of good fishing?
No. Now in the middle of nowhere, and the food was very average, you know, so that dictates a lot for a wrestler if the food's average.
I can say the same thing about going to the United Kingdom. I was not impressed with their
It's not very good. The food is very bland in the UK.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unless you like haggis.
Yeah. No, I like food too much. What is your guilty pleasure?
Well, it's food. It's going to be food. And it's, probably bread, to be honest with you. I eat too much bread. You know, it's something I love, a good sourdough. I probably need to cut back now that I'm not training or working out nearly as much, and I can see it in my belt line. So I would say bread, especially when we travel and it's so much better overseas in Europe and stuff, their bread and everything. So I just can't decide. That's definitely a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
Nice. My wife made homemade bread yesterday. She got these little mini pans. Oh, my gosh. So good.
Too good.
Yeah.
There's something about going like overseas. You're right. The bread over there just tastes so much better.
It's served with every meal. It tastes better. It's so much better. Probably doesn't have all the BS stuff in it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's probably some very good truth to that. The next one is, who is a surprising person that had an impact on your life?
Surprising person. Ooh. Probably for the most general folk is probably just Carrie Collette. Just not a lot of people know. We're from about 10 minutes apart. And, whether he knew it or not, he had a big influence on my life. And the timing was very good. And growing up and having somebody that made the Olympics from the same county. In 2000, and it sort of reassured, or I guess at least gave me the belief that I could do it. So I would say him.
Nice. And last question, what is the hardest thing you've had to overcome?
Hardest thing I've had to overcome is realizing who's in your corner and who's not.
Can you elaborate on that?
When rubber meets the road, who's going to be there for you? Who was there because of what you did or what your title was rather than who you are as a person? So coming to a realization of that, and it could be any point in your life, any big obstacle. And I think that it's a very hard truth to go through that you're just a number to a lot of people, not a person and not a true, genuine relationship. And if somebody's using you for whatever reason or they feel that they need to be close with you rather than genuinely build a relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's a subject that hits really close to home for me personally. I mean, what you just talked about right there is my wife and I talk about it a lot is, at the end of the day, you're replaceable in your job. I mean,
yep.
If I quit tomorrow, they will find somebody to take my spot, and they might do it better. They might not do as well, but they'll find somebody. And so take care of yourself, look after yourself, take care of your family. Be the best person you can be, but in the day, know who your friends are, know what value they bring to you and you bring to them. And if you do that, you'll live a life that's fulfilling for you, fulfilling for them, and you can sleep better at night knowing that you have your people.
That's right. I truly agree with that. And I've been through it a lot recently, so it's at 38, it's sort of a hard realization at some point.
Yeah, you've had an interesting past several months, and I admire the class with which you've come out on the other side, and I think it speaks volume to who you are as a person, and I think you're top-notch, Coleman.
I appreciate it.
I really do. I've been around, as you know, I've been around a whole lot of coaches in my life.
Oh, yeah.
So running the Reno tournament and just what I did and what I do. So you're up there for me, Coleman.
I appreciate that.
Well, like Ryan mentioned earlier, this is very timely that we're talking to you with the Olympics going on. As a young man training to be a wrestler, which for me, you've never met me face to face, just through video. I'm not a wrestler. I'm not built to be a wrestler. I don't have the mental fortitude to be a wrestler. What, as a young boy, was that like, I want to be an Olympian? That's the ultimate goal? Or was it, listen, I want to just go out there and compete because this is what I love to do?
You know, I think that it was a little bit of both, right? It was definitely something that my parents did an unbelievable job of making sure I loved the sport. They didn't. You know, we always talk about, really in every sport, burnout, right? Like, in wrestling, it's probably a higher rate than any just because of the weight class aspect and having to cut weight. I believe that that's the biggest factor of burnout, right? And of course, over wrestling, right? But I believe that my parents and my upbringing, you know, I was a three-sport athlete through high school, didn't cut weight till later on in life. So I believe that they did, first off, making sure I love the sport if I'm going to continue to do it. And then second off was goal, right? I always say it, and I tell my kids and all my athletes, I always used to tell them is you got to think big to be big, right? Like, and you really, set those goals pretty lofty and high, right? And for me, it was always like chase the highest possible. And I think in like 96, I would say, when the games were in Atlanta, and for me as a wrestler, had a little bit more focus on the wrestling piece of it. And then of course, back that up by 2000 with Kerry. Being in the Olympics, his sister's my English teacher. We're trying to watch the stuff during the day and everything. In those moments, so from when I was 10 to 14 is those 2 years, 96 to 2000. That's when I came to realization that is what I want to do. And that's, you know, it's not crazy for me as a small town Pennsylvania kid to think that I can do that. How I was going to do it, I had no freaking clue. Right? It was just like, this is what I want to do. I'll figure it out later. I'm going to maximize every potential I got or every opportunity I have. And I was very fortunate, you know, to grow up in Waynesburg and the town I grew up in, the era, the coaches I had, because it wasn't my dad. My dad he wrestled, but nothing big. He didn't coach me. So it was always my friends' dads who wrestled at a very high level, Division I level and college level. So just fortunate, right time, right place, right town. You know, and really in a good just group of people. It takes, you know, to be even, you know, win the top couple in the state in Pennsylvania as a team and win a couple titles as an individual. That wasn't just because I was good at wrestling. That was because there was a village of people around me that supported me from 6 years old and toted us around the country to these tournaments in season, you know, to Tulsa Nationals. And a couple others, you know, as a kid, and that's why you have success, right? So, long story short, that I had a great upbringing and not burning me out, and yes, I believe you got to think big to be big, and if whether it happens or not, you can at least have no regrets that you gave it everything you had.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned we've mentioned this on this podcast before. It's something we talk about with my boys play sports. We don't have aspirations of them playing professionally. Like, that's not my goal, or if that's their goal, that's fine. I'd have no problem with that. Again, aim big. But I would tell them, you can control two things in life, and there's only two things you can control when you compete. It's your attitude and your effort. And that's it. It's the two things you can control. If you give maximum effort and maximum attitude, your performance will follow. Like, that's the two things you can control. And you hit on that when you're talking about how you hit all the right tones there, talking about your village and how hard you worked and the fact that you had all these people pour into you, because it does take a village to help you get there.
That's right. That's right. Attitude, effort, and energy. Good attitude, great attitude every day you walk in the room. Great effort will dictate your energy that you put into each and every time and not waste anything.
When you are going through, staying on the Olympic track, when you are going through the Olympics and at least the recruiting cycle, and then you chose Oklahoma State with John there, did your desire to be an Olympian increase at that time when you went into the room and working with John, or was it still the same high level that you wanted to become an Olympian?
I mean, it definitely increased, you know, when you walk into the room in 2004 and you have three of the seven Olympians that just made the team in training, right? Eric Guerrero, Jamel Kelly, and Daniel Cormier. And like, I'm a little 18-year-old kid and from Pennsylvania, and spent some time in New Orleans with them leading up to that moment, to the trials as a high school senior, and seeing their training camp leading up and everything, right? Like, how do you not go, that's what I want to do even more, right? Like now I can even, I can touch it. These guys are there, right? And then, mm-hmm. you know, a couple months later, Jamel comes back with a medal, right? And it's just like, you know, this guy's in the room every day. And, you know, it just shows of like, it's even more so possible, right? Like you just, mm-hmm. you literally have to be a soldier. You don't have to, in essence, think of how am I going to do this? Just listen.
Right.
I mean, we've got half the team here. We've got, the greatest American wrestler ever in some people's mind. You've got a four-time NCAA champion, Pat Smith. You've got Mark Branch, one of the greatest. How was I, like, if I just was myself and walked in the room and said, I'll do whatever you guys tell me, like, how do you not get better? How do you not have a goal of being the best ever? Like, we have, like, literally the greatest that had ever done it, like every day on these three mats. And, you know, so it was like, I don't say easy, like it wasn't easy work, but it was like, it was such a good environment that it wasn't much thought other than I want to do that. And I'm just going to listen to what these guys have to say. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't need to put this big elaborate, I need planning, I need recovery, I need, well, just let them tell me. They're the ones that have done way better than me and way more than me. Right. So I think it goes back to, again, like my parents did a great job of surrounded me with great people, and it took a village. And I think that I was very fortunate that, you know, I chose Oklahoma State, and at the time I did, and you know, it felt right, and it was right, right? And I think it took me to a new level.
Right. No, I would completely agree with you, because, you know, I was the SID right when you came in. I was the SID there for OSU, and it was a crazy room. I mean, it was nuts.
Yeah, it was original RTC before RTCs were a thing, yeah. Right? Like, we had like 12 post-grads, and 10 of them were on the national team, 3 of them were Olympian. Like, it was just, it was nutty, really.
It really was nutty. But it was fun as me, not really. I wrestled 4.5 weeks in high school. That's because I liked baseball at that time, and the coaches wanted me to come out for wrestling. I said, fine, just by the time, but I wish I stuck with it, but from me sitting away, sitting on the side, it was cool to watch y'all at that time.
So somebody who's uneducated, you say RTC, what does that stand for?
Regional Training Center. So that came about in like 2012, where USA Wrestling adopted these sort of organized post-grads being able to train with college athletes and in the room. And I would say OSU was probably the original one. You know, I think that, you know, when I came in, we had the three Olympians plus, you know, Tyrone had just graduated. Johnny Thompson had just graduated. Mo Law was here. Shane Roller. I know I'm missing some. I'm trying to think the pictures. In D.C. And then there's a couple more. I know I'm missing them that were all here in the room every day. Right. So it was like, again, like you got some of the greatest ever to do it at the college level, then the international level, and your coaches are unbelievable. And like, I didn't have to think very much. You know, and me and Mako came in together that year. He came in as a transfer and ended up 5 NCAA champs my freshman year. Half the starting lineup was NCAA champs. Like, again, like I didn't have to think about what I needed to do. I just had to look around and listen and watch.
Yeah, it was
not hard to get better when you have that much talent in front of you.
You gotta work hard to not get better, I guess, is where it could have been.
Exactly. And I think at that time Teague was there too.
Teague was there, and I know I'm missing some. I can't remember, getting old, I guess, of who all was there, but it was a hell of a row. I mean, you go in and just get the crap kicked out of you if you really wanted to every single day.
You mentioned being a three-sport athlete. And so I'm gonna assume wrestling is number one. So what was your second favorite sport?
Probably baseball growing up. And I ended up breaking my elbow in high school, so I struggled, to continue. I was around it, but I couldn't really throw. Still struggle to throw today. My right elbow's got two screws holding it together. But the soccer was my other one. It was probably my second best, once I got to high school. I played soccer all the way through, wrestled, baseball, and then jumped back into freestyle in the summer. But again, it was a different era in the sense that year-round, nobody was really doing year-round stuff. Like, that wasn't a thing. You come from a small town. The school needs you in every sport possible, right? So it wasn't just like, oh, I was the only one. No, all my buddies played soccer. We all wrestled. We did something in the spring, and then we'd get back into wrestling. If they didn't wrestle, they played basketball. If they didn't play soccer, they played football. If it wasn't baseball, they ran track. When you're in a town of 5 to 10,000 people, you can't just have a bunch of one-sport athletes. All your sports teams will stink. And there's a lot of – there used to be a lot of pride in those small towns and competing at a very high level. Again, it was creature habit. Like, I remember before I got to high school, we made the state championship in baseball. We're in the state semis in football, and these are some guys older than me. But I looked up to them, and they were all the same guys playing every sport, right? And that was pretty neat for me to see, and motivational for me to do the same thing once I came to got into high school.
Well, and the good thing about soccer or even basketball or track is the fact that the cardio for wrestling is that, I mean, it's great for you guys because, I mean, you're getting keep everything going so you can.
Definitely a base.
It's definitely a base, but there's no shape like wrestling shape, Wes.
Well, no. Yeah. I'm very, very aware that, I see those guys. And very glad I don't do that because, I mean, I'm not that bendy either. Like, I would snap.
We put our kids, Wes knows this, but both kids are in jiu-jitsu. And they do wrestling with the jujitsu, but Dixie, with gymnastics, she's in shape, gymnastics shape. But once she gets to jujitsu, it took a little bit. I mean, she's been doing it for a year now, but it took a little bit for her to really get in jujitsu shape. And now she's just loving it. Absolutely.
Another good base. Amazing.
And so, talk about women's wrestling.
We got two Olympic gold medalists the last 2 days.
Yeah.
And we got another one in the semis here, I think 11:15. Yeah. I thought I got weightlifting on right now. But again, I woke up at, I've been up at 4 o'clock every morning the last couple of days just to catch up with all the wrestling. And, was up this morning and USA kicked some butt. And we got three in the semis, so 6-0 on the day for USA. And look to go 3-0 this evening there, to put three more in the finals, right? I believe that, women's wrestling's growing. I helped them at the front end, not the front end, but in 2017 helped the world team. And, it was just when I was coming off retirement, sorry, 2018, coming off retirement in 2016. And, I think it helped me become a better coach and communicate. And it's definitely different than dealing with a bunch of 18 to 22 year old boys when you start talking to them and everything. And it's really the fastest growing sport in the country at the girls level is wrestling. The growth is unbelievable here stateside, and it's good to see that we've got we're rocking and rolling right now, and looking for, we'll have three of the first four weights wrestling for a medal no matter what. And that's not easy to do at the Olympic level, right? And they're making it, I don't want to say look easy, but Amit and Sarah, they were pretty dominant in all their matches, right? And, Helen so far, same thing. So it's just great to see. I'm a fan of USA. Whoever's out there, I want them to win. And I truly believe that they're the best in the world. And, I think that they've got probably one of the greatest coaches I've been around is Terry Steiner. What he does, I don't know if there's another man that can do it or another female. I mean, he's unbelievable. So for me, just to see him have this success or them have this success is awesome.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch, and hopefully they can get three through today in the semis and then three more golds.
That's right.
That'd be awesome. And then do it again tomorrow.
Yep, another day.
What's that mindset because your journey to get to the Olympics was a little different than it is now?
Yep.
Go through that journey. So the listener that's not in tune to not only who you are, but like Wes, doesn't understand that process to go on to the Olympics.
So really, we'll start with just the process of the games, right, of being in the Olympics, right? So there's 16 countries can qualify per weight class. So it's not an individual, it's a country at first, right? So your weight class has to be qualified for the Olympics. As we had, there's years that we haven't qualified every weight to wrestle, even though we have somebody that won the U.S., they're not qualified in the world, right? So it starts at the prior world championships, the prior year world championships, and it tears down. And so you know what the qualifications are, per se. Right. So starting there, just to give some background, because leading into 2012 Olympic trials, which was in April in Iowa City, 60 kilos was not qualified to wrestle in the games yet. So we had USA had sent Sean Bunch over to China. That was the we didn't qualify at Worlds, didn't qualify at Pan Ams. So that was the first last chance qualifier over in China. So he was already gone out of the weight going into trials. And then Reese was the previous world team member. So he was able to and he was banged up. So he was able to request a later wrestle off. So me going into the Olympic trials knowing that I was going to have to win it just to have – an opportunity at a wrestle off at a later date to actually make the team, and our weight wasn't qualified. So going into that tournament was a lot of uncertainty in the sense that we didn't know where the wrestle off was, what it was, how it looked. All we knew was I had to go win just to give myself the best chance moving forward. And we did, and I was prepared and ended up beating Logan Stieber, who was a young college kid at the time, and in the finals, 2 out of 3. So, then they decided the next day that we would do the wrestle off in New York City Times Square for Beat the Streets event, right? Mm-hmm. And in that time, though, nobody really knew the back end of it. Like I said, Sean was in China competing that next weekend, and we wanted to. There was a last chance that would have been in Finland, I believe Finland that year. And so if Sean didn't want to qualify, I wanted the opportunity or right to go over and qualify the weight. And they had discussed, so we were going to do Reese and I were going to do a one match wrestle off the following weekend on a Saturday or Sunday, and then take a direct flight to wherever we were going for the following weekend for the last chance. So I flew to New York City, got back to Stillwater, drove all the way through the night after the trials, got back to Stillwater. Trained a couple days, flew out to New York City, me and Obi and Kenny, and just in the if Sean doesn't qualify, I got to wake up, make weight, and have a one match wrestle off. So I was already down to weight again a week after the trials, and ended up I woke up I think it was a Friday morning. I was going to make weight that afternoon, and woke up to watch Sean over in China end up qualifying. So I went and ate and. Changed my flight. They changed my flight back to Oklahoma City that next day and came back to Oklahoma City to train and ended up going to World Cup that May, which was in Baku, Azerbaijan. Spent a little over 2 weeks in Baku. We ended up doing pretty well as a team. I believe we won or we were in the finals. I can't remember. But it was sort of really good for me to get over there, and I wrestled some high-level opponents. Ended up winning it and went 5-0. So it was really like a confidence boost going into the wrestle off, which was in June, beginning of June. So once we qualified, we came back. I knew the wrestle off was in June at Beat the Streets. And it was outside Times Square. And I was going to do a one match wrestle off with Reese. And then the winner of that would wrestle Sean in the best two out of three since he qualified the weight. And then we were going to be finally be an Olympian, whoever was at that point. So long story, big summer. Yes, it was very unique and ended up winning the wrestle off right there outside in Times Square that evening. And you know, the rest is sort of history, and just trained for the games another month later and headed out to London.
So what was that like once you qualified? Does like the U.S. Olympic Committee reach out to you, start asking you a bunch of questions about flights information, or does USA Wrestling take care of that for you? Like, what's that look like?
There's a portal. USOC has a portal. And we actually, like, even still today, they send it out a year in advance, and I do all my stuff. They send it out to a big group of people. So I was national team, so we had already filled all that out, right? So they have all your information. Even as a coach now, because I've coached around, like they had my information prior to the event. Like, you have to do this stuff almost like 8-9 months in advance to get it all done. You have to go through all this BS stuff, get it done. USOC. So it's all done and complete for multiple people to wait, and then they sort of just pick them at the end to know it's done. And if you don't have it complete, I'll tell you right now, it's hard to get your credentialing and everything to get in the village and get to the events and all that stuff. So it is important to do. It's just one of those things that takes time. And so as soon as that just triggers the next thing, then once you make the team, they start reaching out and get your – they. I mean, you don't have much option. They just give you the flight and where the heck you get the city you're flying out of. And what you're going, when you're going, where you're going, how you're going is the rest on them. You know, you don't dictate anything.
Wow.
Show up, keep up, huh? And shut up.
That's right.
So caddy mantra from golf is just, that's what a good caddy's supposed to show up, keep up, and shut up. That's all they need you to do. That's the old.
Yep. Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, what was it like being in the Olympic Village in 2012 there in London?
2012. Yeah. It was awesome. I mean, you get to see it like some of the greatest athletes in my mind, right? Like, you know, seeing the Usain Bolt and those guys, you know, and all the swimmers, Phelps, Lochte, and then the basketball players came in every evening and hung out. And, you know, so seeing the Kobe and LeBron and KD and all those guys, and then some of the track guys, you know, the Tyson Gay, some of the fastest guys in the world, right, that you get to interact with and see. And so very unique, just sort of like a who's who, where everybody's sort of relaxed because there's not media in there. There's nobody. It's just a bunch of athletes, right? So you see them in the calf, you see them in the, you know, just really lounging out, drinking coffee, having a snack, whatever. You just see them in a different setting than we always. They're not this really just, oh, I've got to be on point and worried about everything. You know, they can just sort of, they can relax and be themselves type of thing. Very, very cool place. I mean, it's not like, you know, all these the crazy party this and that. No, we're getting right. I mean, I competed the second to last day of the game, so it's not like we were doing anything. You know, and there's a lot of people, right? Like there's very few sports that are – I mean, some, like, weightlifting stuff is done pretty early, but a lot of these, like, team events and all, they're through the whole time, right, or a week long, right? Like swimming is like that whole first week, 8 days, right? So it's not like those guys are going out and then tracks that back half. Well, it's a week long of these different events, you know, so it's not this crazy big party. There's, you know, there's not alcohol. There's not any of that. It is a very cool place. You know, reading this year, you know, of course, we had air conditioned. We had all that stuff as they don't have any of that. And, you know, so it's hit or miss. It's just on the committee that sets it up. But London, it was awesome. It was great.
That's so cool. Going back to your coaching, how has your coaching style or your mindset when you first started coaching to where you are now going into the Ohio RTC, how has your philosophies changed?
You know, I think that you're always going to change a little bit because if you want to be a great coach, you got to listen, you got to keep your mind open, you got to evolve. I think that it's not just, you know, there's a lot of different ways to win per se, right? And you can't just be so dead set. I do think that you have to have a set of core values that you stay strong to and then work from there. But you know, I think my mindset, you know, going in, you always think that you can get everybody to wrestle similar to yourself per se, like my skills. Like, I want to teach elbow control. I want to teach everybody to move their feet. I want to do the A, B, C, and D that helped make me successful. Not everybody can wrestle that way, right? Yeah. So you've got to figure out, like, hey, let's not put you guys in a box of what you need to do, but let's create your own box and then expand it each and every day, right? So everybody's got a different base set of skills, you know, whether it's a score to the right, score to the left, score from the open, score from contact, right? So I first off identifying all those and then being able to take that and then make it bigger, right? I don't think you need 100 scores. I think you need a couple, mm-hmm. right, to each side, right? And it's sort of like everything, keep it simple, stupid. We sometimes overthink, overwatch. I need to do this. This Russian does this. Sitiev's awesome here. Sitikov can do this. JB can do this. Oh, cool. Right. Well, why don't you be your own self? Right. Mm-hmm. Take what they have and make it your own. So I think that I don't know if I've changed immensely, but I have learned a lot, if that makes sense, of how to, you know, the ultimate goal. How can we get through to a bunch of kids and make them men ready for the real world? But how can we get through and make them the best versions of themselves each and every day? Right. If somebody had the secret sauce, they could make a lot of money, but I don't believe anybody does. And it's trying to figure that out and get to know the guys. I think that, you know, there's two things that I believe that really in life and in coaching that are crucial, and that's communication and relationships, right? You know, these kids are going to do a lot more for you if they have a great relationship and they know you love them and care for them, and it's more than just wrestling. It's more than just wins and losses. It's about life. I think that they'll run through a, you know, we always say run through a brick wall. I think that's how they do that, is because they care for you just as much as you care for them.
I think that's spot on, personally. I mean, it's, you see it in all the coaches, and you know, you almost want to raise your kids like that as well. Because each of my kids are different. I mean, different personalities, different likes, different interests. I mean, granted, one's a boy, one's a girl, but still, they're different. And I think you got to parent that way. And to some respects, you're their parent too. You know,
that, absolutely. Co-parent. We co-parent as coaches.
Yeah, you really do. And it's amazing what you guys do.
Yeah, have high expectations and don't waver from that. And just let them know when you mess up. It's not that I don't love you. It's just that you messed up. I'm trying to help you not make that mistake again. It has nothing to do with, you know, I'm not mad. I'm just trying to teach. And if we continue to learn, you get better. I mean, you mentioned communication relationships. That's the cornerstone of anything, that in any relationship or any partnership or job or coaching or teaching or whatever it may be. Those two things have to be the cornerstone of anything to be successful.
That's right. That's right. You know, it's always a two-lane road. If I'm going to pour my life and soul and heart and everything into it, and if you give it back, we'll have no regrets at the end of the day.
I don't mean to keep harping on the Olympics. It's just, you know, being a Texan, first and foremost, we take immense pride in being a Texan, but also it pours into America. Like, the joke in Texas, we wished Americans love Texas as much Texans love Texans. when you were standing on that podium after you'd won the medal, what was the wave of emotion and feeling you had standing up there? What were you thinking? Like, what at that moment? Because that's, you've reached the pinnacle of amateur athletics.
Yep. So that, I don't want to sound like I'm undervaluing it, but, you know, there was never a moment in training that I woke up and I even thought about what it would feel like to be an Olympic bronze medalist. I only wanted to be a gold medalist, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to in the moment, because my tournament was one day, so like I lost 2 hours later, I'm wrestling for bronze, right? Like, that's not an easy turnaround. So if you've never had the thought of like, what do I do after a loss at this stage of my life at 25, and it's the biggest tournament of my life, and it's massive. And, you know, so the emotion was, you know, I've got to change, you know, I've got to figure a way to get through this match and go win, because if I don't, then I get a couple cool t-shirts and polos and a cool singlet, and that's about it. Right. And you know, so once you're on the stand, of course, all this elation after the match and happy and, you know, unbelievably happy and grateful and thankful. And then you're sort of surreal. You're on the stand and everybody's looking at you, and then you got to listen to the Azerbaijan, the Azeri national anthem, right? And it's like, gosh dang it, I was so close to having mine. So it sort of hurts per se a little bit. Again, I don't want to undersell. Like I'm very proud and very thankful for everything I've done, but like when you've got to listen to somebody else's national anthem, like man, that sort of hurt my heart. You know, that it wasn't the national anthem and Star Spangled Banner and me up there. And I knew it was a tight match, right? So that sort of came back to me, you know, of man, I want that to be me.
It just shows you the competitor you are. You didn't go there for third. You went there for first. That's how you work. That's what you train for. And but you turned it off. You're like, listen, I've got one more match. I've got to go win it. Just get rid of the negative self-talk and let's get out there and go do what we trained to do and go win this next
that's
match.
Right.
Even though, and it's a hard lesson when you get kicked in the teeth, right? Is you lose, you're like, I can't accomplish the goal I wanted, but you know what? There's still somebody in front of me that I need to beat. Like I need to stand back up, dust myself off and go win that next match. And that says a lot about your character. The fact that you just said, you know, I'm done. Cause a lot of kids today just like, that's it. I quit. I'm not, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think in those moments, right, you got to really deep dive into what your why is, right? And I think your why might change in that moment, right? You know, I wasn't wrestling in the Olympics for myself. You know, it wasn't about me. It wasn't about me winning. There was a lot more to it. You know, I had a family that toted me around the country growing up. I had a wife that was unbelievably supportive. I had a daughter back home. That was a year old, and my mother-in-law was watching. Like, there's all these other things. I had 97 people in London supporting me, right? So that wasn't for me to go out there. That wasn't about me, right, at all, right? And I think in those tough moments, you've got to reflect on why are you here? What are you doing this for, right? And it could change right then. Man, this isn't about me, right? My thing's done. I wanted to be a gold medalist. It's not about me. But, man, all these people came all the way over here to see you, right? That at least you can go out there and give them everything you got, right? So that to me was like it's why it, you know, why I went back out there and did and could change my mindset.
I think it's important for athletes to be able to change their why, their mindset, just on the fly.
Yeah.
And I see those that do are more successful than those that don't. How has the athlete mentality and physicality change from when you ended your career in wrestling and started coaching to now, or has it?
Well, again, not to sound bad, but I don't know if the athlete mentality's changed. I think the parental aspect has changed immensely from when I grew up and you grew up to what it is now, which in essence is we're only creatures of habit. We're only creatures of what we do. Right. Or what we're shown. Right. So I think that's changed the athlete mentality through parenting. Right. And I believe that we will have a different view in about 10 years when all of us are tired of all the BS and our kids are way different. And maybe I'm just naive because the people I hang out with are like that, you know, but I do believe that it's not the athlete's fault, or we always say, oh, these guys are way softer than I was back then. And they're whatever, you know, are they? No. Right. There's a lot more going on in this world today. We didn't have all these distractions. We didn't have technology. We didn't have Twitter or X or whatever it's called, Instagram. We didn't really have laptops. We didn't have computers. We didn't have any of that stuff that everything was accessible at your hands and this. I didn't have an app on TV that I could watch every freaking sport in the Olympics for 2 weeks and not miss a thing. You had to wait for if wrestling was on at 2 a.m., then you saw what it was NBC was showing, right? Like, so I don't know if it's definitely changed a little bit, but I think that it might be even harder today with everything going on in this world. I believe we would live in a crazy messed up world today, that we're swinging so far one way that we've got to get back to some normalcy. You know, it's going to start with us on the ground level and parents and dictating, you know, and letting our kids and teaching our kids and hopefully it changes what's happening in the world. I don't think that we can change the whole piece, but we can change what we're around and who we're around and what we're doing. So I don't know. It's definitely probably changed. It's definitely evolved. Are they Softer, no. Do they have a harder life? 100%, because I believe that the distractions, and I believe that social media is the demise of our society, and these kids are caught up with it and everything. So, and that's what they got to deal with, and that's what we got to deal with as parents, right? So it's a tricky thing.
Well said. Well said. Because I mean, you're right. Our job is to be the guardian for our children,
yep,
the best we can be. We have to let them experience failure and understand.
Nah, we do, but yeah, parents don't like that. No. They blame. We've been in 10, 15 years of the blame game, and not having self-responsibility for our kids, or just letting them fail and cry and see what it feels like. And that's why I love the sport of wrestling, because I can't go out on the mat for my kids. They've got to feel what it feels like to the other kid to physically in a controlled fight. You just got your tail whipped. Now what are you going to do? You know, and that's why, you know, you got to let these kids. It's hard to see. But we can't just sit here and say and go blame the coach and yell at the coach and get an argument because Johnny didn't get to play as much or he got beat and that's BS and this guy, we're better than this person over here. How do you know you sell insurance for a living? How the hell do you know? You know, go back to doing what you do and I'll do what I do. You know, and that's just that we got into such this game, and I don't know why or how, where it came from, because it's not what my parents were. I can tell you that right now. Something went wrong. It was the question was, what'd you do? What did you do? Not what did they? Hey, what'd they do over there? How are you? Were they the ones that started? No, it didn't matter, right? Hey, Coleman, what'd you do? That's your fault. You handle it. You know, and I think we will get back to that. I just think that it's going to take us as parents to change it as a whole.
I agree. For the record, Coleman was not talking about Wes and I because we're both in the insurance business.
I was not. A general general statement. I always say when crap hits the fan with the NCAA, we're going to have a bunch of overqualified, high qualified Olympian insurance salesmen because it's going to always be there. You know.
Oh yeah. So.
you talked about that. You talked about soccer. My youngest plays soccer. My oldest plays basketball. And my youngest, we're going through some changes with some teams. And his coach has been putting him at different. He normally plays forward. And the ride home the night, he's like, I just want to play forward. I'm like, when your coach tells you to get out there, you go where he tells you because he's the coach. It's his world. Your job is to show up and perform the way he asks you to perform. You don't do what you want to do. You do what you're told to do. When you're out there on that pitch, you're a soldier, and your job is to take orders and say yes, sir. And if you can't handle that, then we'll finish the season and we don't have to play anymore. Like we'll just not play soccer. But don't tell. I'm not going to say I don't want to. No, that's not how this works. Like this, I'm sorry. I mean,
I agree. Want to and need to are two different things.
Yeah. If you want to go have fun, let's go get ice cream. Like if you want to play sports, stand up, man up, and let's go play. Like and let's figure it out.
That's right.
I got a little trouble too for basketball. I coached basketball a few years ago. We didn't win. Like we just got our tails kicked. And they handed me a bunch of medals to give the boys. I was like, what is this for? Like for your team. I'm like, we didn't win anything. They're like, well, give it to them. I'm like, no. So I just walked in there and threw them in the trash. And one of the parents saw me like, what are you doing? I'm like, winners get trophies. Losers get better. Like, so I'm not going to give you a trophy because we finished last. Like we don't, that's not the world we live in. Like I don't get a trophy for finishing second. I don't get paid. Like, so. Yeah. No, it doesn't work.
I got a call. There we go. I don't ever, you know, I always relate winning and losing, right? If I suck at my job, I get fired. Why do you get a trophy? Because you lost. Or why, you know, and tell parents that, hey, if you're terrible and you don't bring in sales or you don't do this, you don't, what happens? Well, I get fired. Okay, so why are you sugarcoating it for your kid? Let them experience that early and they'll be more prepared later on.
Exactly. I would 100% agree. And so, title of the podcast is When Hard Work Beats Talent. What is your story on when hard work beat talent? Wes and I have had this discussion several times, even before starting this, that you always say, hey, that kid is super talented, but if his work ethic matched that talent, he'd be unbelievable. And it could be in business, in sports, whatever it is. What's that story with you being in your position and coaching and wrestling and hanging out with kids at camps, et cetera, that you can say, alrighty, that kid is super talented, but if he could actually have a good work ethic, that kid would be unbeatable.
You know, I think we're always, I think we're, we're born or we're given or we're whatever with some God-given talents. I don't believe that, but I believe that there's always work that puts into that. That at some point in your life, you got to work to pull the maximum talent out. Right? We see these kids that are talented, right? I don't believe that, you know, at the end of the day, in collegiate wrestling specifically, talent isn't anything, right? And I say that in the sense that the talented ones that do work hard are your great ones. Your talented one or your hard workers that aren't talented are your good ones. And your talented ones that don't work hard are your nothings, right? So you got to look at it. And for me, again, it goes back to like growing up and parenting, right? Like if I was talented, I don't believe my dad would have parented me different and been all up in my butt if I didn't do something right or if I was living wrong or, you know, if I was going to be lazy and not do this, right, at a certain point in my life, I think that he wouldn't have said anything differently because he was wanting to raise a good human, right? So,
right.
And I believe that, you know, I don't know if I don't believe I had very much talent personally. You know, I think that that's for somebody else to figure out. But I do believe that I had a desire to live right and do right. And I wanted to win very deep down in the core of my belly, my heart, like that it pulled all the hard work out, right? I was willing to do whatever it took, to a certain extent, you know, and I believe that's what you need. You gotta, and it's really what we talk about is love, right? If I love this sport so much, how are you not gonna work hard? Why are you not like I love it so much that I want to be exhausted every single day, just to do the right thing and have the opportunity to be great. I don't know if I'm gonna be great, but I'm gonna have the opportunity. I'm gonna better my chances. Like, it comes from love of the sport and love of what you do, and like literally. And today, do I love to get tired and go work out? Absolutely not. You know, I'm 38 years old. My body hurts. I don't want to do that, right? I did it till I was 30 years old, and I loved every bit of it. I don't want to do that anymore, right? I'm in a different stage of life. I'd rather not, in my mind, waste my time to do that, right? Because what do I get out of it? What, to be in better shape? I was that way for 30 years. I'm good. I don't, you know, I'm over that point of my life. But, you know, in the moment in that time, like, I literally love to be exhausted every day, eat right, feel good, feel my body, but it was all for a purpose, to be the best in the world, right? And again, I don't care what sport it is. If you love to do it, you'll find a way to be great at it, right? And great at it might not be an Olympian. Great at it might not be a world team member, especially in a team sport, right? Wrestling, very easy. You show up, you win, you're on the team, you do this, you're on the team, right? Like, when you got somebody else evaluating you, and soccer and lacrosse and baseball, right? Well, is Johnny the best? I don't know. I mean, he looks like he could throw better than this guy over here. He's a center. I don't know, right? You're evaluating. Somebody's evaluating you, right, where you've got to do certain things. And that to me is hard, right? Wrestling, shoot, show up and win. You're the best, right? It's a lot easier system that we had to deal with, right? So going through with my daughter, who's a big, wants to be, or says she does, or she's, soccer lacrosse player right now, right? Like, we're navigating the scene as it is and making sure that she's not going to pick one or the other as a 13-year-old girl. Like, we're going to make sure that she has the opportunity and whatever it may be. And again, it might, does she want to be on the World Cup team and the U.S. team? Maybe, right? And that might not happen, but I don't even know how to get there yet, you know, because it's not my cup of tea. I'm used to just going to Fargo, winning the national title, getting recruited, being an NCAA champ, and showing up to Olympic trials, winning, and you're on the team. It's pretty simple. Everybody knows about them, and I don't need to all this stuff. But yeah, it's pretty simple, right? It's not that simple in other sports.
No, it's not. Not at all. So, talk about what you're doing now. You're with the Ohio RTC. How did those discussions come about? Have you officially started going up there, working out, training, coaching with them? What's that process? And I'm excited to see you and your family don the OSU swag that I've seen on Jessica's Instagram. And it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, really started Jay, you know, Jagger's, him and I go back to, we graduated high school the same year, so we've known each other. He's an Ohio kid, I'm PA, so we've known each other for a long time. Just, as you know, wrestling world's small, around the same weight. Really just knew him, and he was one of the first ones to reach out right when everything went down as a friend, and didn't even know the ins and outs of what was going on, what was happening. Just called and said, "Hey, man, just checking on you," and that's how it started. And then just kept checking in, and all of a sudden, you know, hey, you should, you know, come check out the Bucks. And I don't, what position? I don't know. I don't know what we have. I don't know if we have anything. But let's get creative. And I just want you around, and you're a great mind, and really like you. And so I flew, Jessica and I flew up and talked to him, and you know, we worked something out, and we'll be, you know, I'll be going up later this month, here in a couple of weeks to help him out and hang out for a little bit, and we'll see where it takes us. You know, I'm just excited that, excited and grateful that there's good people in this sport still. I had lost some hope there for a little bit that there was, and you know, so they were there as friends first, and you know, of course they're a great program, and I believe that they have high moral grounds and they do things right, and they've got a good group of kids and coaches, and it's not about them, it's about us and how we're going to do it together and how we're going to maximize these guys' potential and how we're going to win and how we're, you know, it's not I need to do this, I need to do that, I need to sit in the corner, you know, and that was, it's sometimes unique in the sport, and I thought it was pretty cool that these guys were there, and they're very, like I said, very high level, won a national title a while back, and Tom's an unbelievable coach, and he's an unbelievable human of gathering people together with like minds and doing it together, not about the ego of us and I and all that. So we're excited, you know. Like I said, I've talked to people before. I didn't know if I was going to get back in the sport, and still don't know if I will fully. We'll see. We'll see where it takes me. And like I said, it's I've felt like I've given my life to this sport and my passion and my heart, and it's in the recent months, you know, sort of shown some true colors, and I'm not sure I like what it's shown. So it's every decision I make from here on out will be about my kids and my wife, my family, and that's first and foremost. It's not about me. Every decision I made for a lot of years was about what's best for myself and my wrestling and my coaching and this and that. And it's not about that anymore. Right. I'm on the back burner, and I need to be. It's about my family and what's best for my kids. And I just want them to have the same opportunities I had growing up and all that. So that's what we're going to do.
Perfect. I think the sport needs you. I love seeing you in the sport. Hopefully you can stay in the sport a long, long time. And maybe Clancy is a kid that you recruit. But who knows?
I wouldn't wish that you have to deal with Tubner, because I mean, he's going to be asking for an NIL deal,
ever
stuff. Like, it's going to be, it'd be a lot. Like, yeah, it'd be a lot.
Oh, yeah.
If you can deal with Beth, you're in great shape. You have to deal with this guy, I'm going to have to, listen, you're going to need some extra payment, like hazard pay.
But in reality, in all seriousness, I love having you in the sport. I think the sport needs you, needs your mind, needs your passion and your compassion for the kids. I think the sport is better off that way. And hopefully you continue being involved in some capacity as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And like I said, we'll see where it takes us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited for you. So where can people find you? On the Instagram, on all the socials?
I'm on there. I have handles, but if I'm going to like be active, I don't know. I'm not very active on any social media. Instagram, Twitter, it's like C Scott 60 kgs, I believe, is still, which I don't weigh that anymore, but I did for a while. I'm sort of on all of them, but me responding and like keeping up with it, I'm not very good at it. Put it that way, and it's not a priority for myself. I don't need to brand myself anymore at 38 years old and be out there, and I'm not going to be in Twitter beef and you know, commenting on people's photos and all that. That's just not myself. You might get a like out of me or a retweet. That's about all I can give you.
Hey, that's some that people live for, that like or that retweet.
That's right.
So, well, Coleman, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it, and we look forward. I look forward to seeing you excel and succeed over at the Ohio RTC right now.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you guys for the time and all the questions and the good conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We will have this posted really soon. We look forward to getting your feedback. So if you have any thoughts, please let us know on all the social media channels that we have what you would like to hear or you'd like the next guest we'd like to have. If you have any questions, shoot us a message and we can get it over to Coleman. And maybe he can tweet you there, send you something on X and respond to you. Maybe if you're lucky. So thank you very much for being with us. Until next time, have a great day.